This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Love out of desire for Allah. He covets from the bottom of the heart to see Allah, to be able to be in His presence in more than just hearing Him, more than just talking to Him, to actually be able to see Him. There's an innocence in that desire as well. But then there's the Bani Israel way of asking questions, where they want to learn the nitty-gritties. What is the color of the cow? What is the gender of the cow? What type of cow is it? We want very precise knowledge. There is knowledge that you seek in order to put into practice. But then there is knowledge that you seek to evade practice, to run away from practice. That I get so much into the nitty-gritties and the hair-splitting details that responsibility be damned. I don't have to worry about that anymore. And then there's a third type of questioning in which you're challenging, in which you come from a place of entitlement. You come from a place of prestige, where you really center yourself at the heart of reality. The world revolves around me, and I deserve to know everything. And how dare someone not tell me something or anything? And that's the kind of challenge that the Bani Israel again posed to Musa alayhi salam, where they said, we want to look at Allah. Now theirs was not a desire to learn. Theirs was not a desire to practice. Theirs was not a desire for, it wasn't out of love of Allah. It was rather out of a jealousy for Musa alayhi salam. How come you get to talk to him and we don't? How come you get this privilege and we don't? So there is an envy in that search for knowledge, apparently. So even something as sacred as knowledge, our intent for knowing can really make it impure, make it the worst experience for us. So even when we know, if our demands for knowledge are met, we don't grow in that knowledge. The dua that Allah teaches us in the Quran, Rabbi zidni ilma. Allah, increase me in knowledge. It's not increase my knowledge. It's increase me in my knowledge. Because if I am not increasing, if I am not growing, and my knowledge is, then that knowledge is a lot of questions for me to answer on the Day of Judgment. That knowledge may be the reason why I end up in the hellfire. I know a lot, but my action doesn't match up. My practice doesn't match up. My responsibility towards the community, towards my family, towards humanity, does not match up. It is all well and good to seek knowledge. It's encouraged. It's incredibly important. But with what intent? Am I increasing? Am I a better person? Or the more credentials I have in front of my name, the more alphabets I add in front of my name, does that increase me in arrogance? Do I talk condescendingly to people? Do I not have time to have a civil human conversation with someone? Because then that knowledge is not helping me. What Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells us in the Quran, إِنَّمَا يَخْشَ اللَّهَ مِنْ عِبَادِهِ الْعُلَمَاءِ, that only those who genuinely have this khashiyya of Allah, this awe of Allah, this recognition of His greatness, who are those people? They are the scholars. It may well be they have no credentials. It may well be that they don't have any formal education. But what they have is the fruit of knowledge. And that is the khashiyya of Allah. We may study chemistry and learn in books of chemistry and our experiments in the lab or whatnot, what is coffee made of? What is the chemical structure of caffeine? What's contained in milk? What vitamins? We can have the chemical knowledge of it. We can have very precise knowledge of it. We can predict How much caffeine does what to the heart? By what percentage your heart rate is going to go up? We can have that level of knowledge. But if you've never tasted coffee, if you've never experienced what it does to you, all that knowledge of chemistry, what good is it? It is good for a particular domain, perhaps, but in the domain of knowing Allah, you can know your creed, you can know your tawheed, you can know the sifat of Allah, but then experiencing those sifat. That's the difference between the person who knows just the chemistry and the person who experiences the drink itself. So experiencing Allah. When we turn to the book of Allah with this understanding, just looking for do's and don'ts in the book, not really realizing that the relationship of Allah, experiencing Allah, how important, how significant it is, then the do's and don'ts become a burden. The do's and don'ts become obstacles. We feel fettered. We feel that this is holding us back. We want more freedom. We want to do what we want to do. Why do we have to be curtailed? And so what does Allah want with all of what He's telling us? Even though one of the beauties of Islam is what needs to be done, the do's and don'ts, the halal, the haram, the obligations, they're a very small list. You can literally count them on your fingers. The main obligations and the main prohibitions. And less than 6%, less than, according to some scholars, less than 3% of the Quranic ayat talk about that. But even that becomes a burden. Even that becomes so much. So much of the rest of our relationship with Allah is left open. So much of that is, what do you want to do? How would you want to do it? It is left for people to volunteer themselves, to increase in their closeness to Allah. Nevertheless, the question keeps coming, what does Allah want? Why all of this? So Allah tells us quite explicitly, يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُبَيِّنَ لَكُمْ. Allah wants to clarify things for you. Part of your intent is quite justified. Nobody likes to be confused. Nobody likes to be kept in the dark. You want light. You want to be enlightened. Because when you see, you know. And when you know, you see. So Allah wants to clarify things for you. So the contradictions, the difficulties, the confusions, they are dispelled. The more they're dispelled, the more you're able to act. The more you're able to do what you're supposed to do. وَيَهْدِيَكُمْ سُنَنَ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ. And to guide you to the ways of those before you. That you're not the first batch of humanity. There have been generations before us. So many, in fact, millennia of humanity, of history that we need to learn from. Of how we need to become a people of history. So much about us becomes short-sighted because all of what we care about is around us. All of what we care about is what's going on in the world right now. And when we look at that, we're quick to conclusions. No, man, Muslims got nothing going for them. Being Muslim is a handicap in the 21st century. We're on the receiving end of practically every genocide you can imagine. We're going to be suffering, and it comes at a cost. I may want to put my Muslimness behind me, hide it a little, and put my whiteness or Americanness in front. Maybe that gets me certain advantages, and that results from a short-sightedness. Because what we do not realize is in the expanse of human history, the turn of events, rise and fall of empires, has always taken the world by surprise. But which world has it taken by surprise? It has taken that world by surprise which does not look at history as a whole. Those people are always shocked. Oh my God, what just happened? They were such a superpower. How did the tables turn? The Roman Empire, the Persian Empire, the Ad, the Thamud, the Pharaohs. What happened to such great civilization? To the ways of those people. When they became arrogant, when they became full of themselves, when they thought that they knew enough, or that they were strong enough to be able to manage and maneuver the world without the help of God, that they could turn their backs on God and live life the way they want to, what did that result in? What was the consequence of that attitude? And what was the consequence of the attitude of those people who humbled themselves before Allah, who turned to Allah, who submitted before Allah, who exalted the tawheed of Allah, whose values perpetuated themselves in the history of humanity, that whatever good that it is today in the world, anywhere in the world, you will definitively trace that good back to the prophets. Whatever is recognized as good, whatever is recognized as a value, you will identify, if you were to trace it, its origins in scripture, in prophetic work, in prophetic sacrifice, and the followers of prophets, regardless of what it is. So Allah wants you to guide, to be guided to that path of the people before you. وَيَتُوبَ عَلَيْكُمْ And He wants to turn to you. Tawbah means to turn to someone. Tawbah means to turn back, specifically in the context of the Quran, to turn back towards Allah, to turn towards Allah. But it's a word that Allah does not just use for human beings, that we are the people who are supposed to do tawbah. Allah uses this word for Himself too. We do tawbah, we turn towards Allah, but Allah too is at-tawwab. And this is the context in which He's using this word here. So that Allah can turn towards you. That you turn towards Him, He turns towards you. But you need to have a self. You need to have a strong enough individuality. You need to have a strong enough personality that it can withstand that turning towards Allah. That it can appreciate Allah's turning towards it. Because that's what Allah ultimately wants. Wallahu alimun hakim, and Allah is all-knowing, all-wise. Wallahu yuridu an yatuba alaykum. Of the three things that the previous ayah spoke about, Allah picks out the last one and puts extra emphasis on that and says, what Allah really wants is to turn towards you. What Allah really wants is to face you. Think about it. We're people driven by self-worth. And our self-worth is determined very heavily by what others think of us. Am I knowledgeable enough? Am I good-looking enough? Am I rich enough? Am I powerful enough? Am I eloquent enough? All these measures that we put out. And it's constantly running in our head, what did they think of me? What did he think of me? What did she think of me? What impression did I create? How many likes did I get? How many followers do I have? How many people laughed at my joke? How many people accepted my dinner invitation? We define our self-worth through all of these measures of how people look at us. Allah is inviting us, offering us a very different measure, a very different standard of associating our self-worth with. And that is to do with our relationship with Him. And he's already laid out, you know, whoever you are, however you are, wherever you come from, whatever the color of your skin, whatever the level of your education, however rich or poor you are, whatever rank you have in the corporate sector, wherever your house is, whatever car you drive, none of that matters. Bottom line, if you're a human being, Allah wants to turn towards you. You are worthy of Allah. You are worthy of Allah. You are significant enough. You are important enough for His attention, to be the full focus of His attention. And He wants nothing more than to turn towards you. And here is an invitation. Would you want to turn towards Him? Because you turn towards Him and He turns towards you, what does that ultimately do? This results in a very real face-to-face meeting on the Day of Judgment and then in paradise. Ultimately, you've been sent in this world so you can be all grown up and all strong enough to appreciate that reunion with Allah, which you otherwise would not have been able to appreciate if that's just the state you were born in. Your journey in this life from weakness until strength is to have enough strength to withstand this degree of love from Allah. Wallahu yuridu an yatuba alaykum. What do the other people want? Who tell you, follow your heart, be yourself, do you, you be you. All your Instagram influencers who are inspiring you. What do they want? They want that you, those who follow their own desires, they want you to follow yours and just your desires. And they want you to forget that every single person who has chosen this life of hedonism, every single person who has put themselves and their desires as their God, has been destroyed. You have 23 million people in the United States of America who are addicted to drugs who testify to that. If they could, they would tell you, please don't. We came down this path and now we can't get off it. We were told that following our desires was our heaven, was our felicity, was our success. Now we can't get off it. So people who follow their desires, they want you to be led astray as well. They want you to identify with your desires. I want to be me. If wanting to be me means doing whatever it is that comes in my heart, then I'm setting this world up for catastrophe. Because then all of what this society turns into is a jungle where we're literally willing to rip each other off for whatever it means to for me to be me. يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ أَن يُخَفِّفَ عَنْكُمْ. Allah wants to make things easy for you. But you go down the path of desires only, ultimately desires. It's not that Allah doesn't care for your desires. He's kept them for you. All He wants is for you to curtail them, put some boundaries around them. That's it. That unbridled following of desires is what He warns against. That's what makes life hard. Allah is not an enemy to human pleasure. He created it. He promises it. He sanctifies it. He's pleased with it. He rewards for it too. يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ أَن يُخَفِّفَ عَنْكُمْ. He wants to make things easy for you. وَخُلِقَ الْإِنسَانُ ضَعِيفًا. Because a human being has been created weak. And if in that weakness we continue to find support in that which is weak, we weaken ourselves further. We become more and more dependent. The stronger the object of our love, the focus of our love, the stronger it'll make us. And Allah wants us to recognize that weakness, and within that weakness find our strength, and with that strength stand in front of them. And when we mention Him, He mentions us. When we mention Him in a gathering, He mentions us in a gathering better than ours. To the point that He becomes the tongue with which you speak, the hand with which you strike, the foot with which you walk. And if you go to Him walking, He comes to you running. آخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله. بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين. قال تبارك وتعالى في كتابه الكريم: بعد أن أقول أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، إن الله وملائكته يصلون على النبي، يا أيها الذين آمنوا صلوا عليه وسلموا تسليما. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم إنك حميد مجيد. اللهم بارك على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما باركت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم إنك حميد مجيد. ربنا ظلمنا أنفسنا وإن لم تغفر لنا وترحمنا لنكونن من الخاسرين. ربنا آتنا في الدنيا حسنة وفي الآخرة حسنة وقنا عذاب النار. اللهم انصر من نصر دين محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم واجعلنا منهم. اللهم اخزل من خزل دين محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم ولا تجعلنا معهم. اللهم انصر الإسلام والمسلمين في غزة يا رب العالمين. اللهم انصرهم، اللهم أعزهم، اللهم يسر لهم أمورهم يا رب العالمين. عباد الله رحمكم الله واستغفر الله، إن الله يأمركم بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون. فاذكروا الله يذكركم فادعوه يستجب لكم، إنه تعالى جواد كريم ملك بر رؤوف رحيم. أقم الصلاة.
الله أكبر، الله أكبر، أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله، أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله. حي على الصلاة، حي على الفلاح، قد قامت الصلاة، قد قامت الصلاة. الله أكبر، الله أكبر، لا إله إلا الله.
لا إله إلا الله. Please keep the rows straight. And please keep your phones on silent. الله أكبر. الحمد لله رب العالمين، الرحمن الرحيم، مالك يوم الدين، إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين، اهدنا الصراط المستقيم، صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. يريد الله ليبين لكم ويهديكم سنن الذين من قبلكم ويتوب عليكم، والله عليم حكيم. والله يريد أن يتوب عليكم، ويريد الذين يتبعون الشهوات أن تميلوا ميلا عظيما. يريد الله أن يخفف عنكم، وخلق الإنسان ضعيفا. الله أكبر. سمع الله لمن حمده الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين ألم نشرح لك صدرك ووضعنا عنك وزرك الذي أنقض ظهرك ورفعنا لك ذكرك فإن مع العسر يسرا إن مع العسر يسرا فإذا فرغت فانصب وإلى ربك فارغب الله أكبر سمع الله لمن حمده الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر السلام عليكم ورحمة الله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته The announcements. We would like to thank Dr. Yusuf Raza for coming to Hamza and delivering this beautiful khutbah. And thanks to Hafiz Yusuf also for leading the Jummah Salah. By the way, Dr. Yusuf Raza also teaches tafsir in Hamza every Sunday between Maghrib and Isha. All are encouraged to join. Last week, Sheikh Dr. Yusuf Raza finished Surah Yusuf, right? And what we will be doing this Sunday? Surah Ar-Ra'd. Okay, inshallah. All are encouraged to come. It is very beneficial. Program every Sunday between Maghrib and Isha. Now, a few quick announcements. Tomorrow, we will have Cub Scout open house at 2:30. For more detail, please see Brother Ahrar Jamil. Next Friday, we will have a Quran night After Maghrib, next Friday, and Hafiz Junaid and his students will be there. All are welcome, encouraged to join. It's Quran night next Friday. Next Friday, Al Maghrib is organizing a program in Crown Plaza, Norcross, and Sheikh Majid Mahmood and Sheikh Yasir Qadi will be there also, and the program will start at 6 p.m. They will be telling us the stories of Prophet Dawood and Prophet Suleiman. So next Friday at 6 p.m. Crown Plaza. Medina Institute is organizing an event, Rabiul Awwal Special, next Friday at 7:30 p.m. And Nasheed artist Nadir Khan will be there also. Tomorrow night, Georgia Islamic Institute is hosting a program, Siratul Nabi, and Qazi Fadlullah will be there. Program will start at 7:30. Dinner will be served. And last announcement is Greenview Madani Center is hosting a Siratul Nabi program on Sunday morning after Fajr. Breakfast will be served. Assalamu alaikum.